Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine getting the green light from Philippine regulators. India's COVID-19 case tally soars past 20 million. Argentina also reeling from a surge in coronavirus infections. Later on in the program, we'll speak to Philippine Ambassador to Argentina, Lingbingay Lacalale, for an update on the situation there. And the Philippine Coast Guard fends off Chinese militia vessels in Sabina Shoal. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, we're glad you could join us today. Philippine regulators approving the use of another COVID-19 vaccine in the country. We'll get to that later. But first, we turn our attention to India, where COVID-19 infections soar past 20 million. As this report tells us, the country's worsening crisis prompted the suspension of its largely popular cricket league.
India's first drive-in vaccination facility opened on Tuesday in Mumbai as coronavirus infections in the hard-hit country surged past 20 million amid growing calls for a national lockdown. As COVID-19 tears through the country, experts say many cases are going undetected. The surge has coincided with a dramatic drop in vaccinations due to supply and delivery problems. But on Tuesday, the elderly and those most at risk in Mumbai poured into the vaccination center to get their jabs while staying in their cars. And even though aid is now coming in from other countries, India's healthcare system is falling apart. Hospitals are running out of beds and oxygen and unable to help many who are critically ill. The situation is so dire that the country's beloved cricket league was suspended on Tuesday. With an estimated brand value of nearly $7 billion, the Indian Premier League tournament had been played without spectators to huge TV audiences, but has been severely criticized for continuing while the healthcare system is in collapse. Also being criticized, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government for allowing religious festivals and political gatherings attended by hundreds of thousands of people to go on. Now his government is reluctant to impose a national lockdown for fear of the economic fallout. In response, opposition leader Rahul Gandhi has said a national lockdown was desperately needed and that it was the, quote, only option.
A legal defeat for Argentinian President Alberto Fernandez as the country's Supreme Court overrules his decree to close down schools in Buenos Aires amid a surge in COVID-19 cases. Fernandez ordered schools in and around the capital to close temporarily during a lockdown which will last until May 21. But the High Court ruled Fernandez's decree violated the legally enshrined autonomy of Buenos Aires, whose local government also pushed back against the order. Argentina's latest surge has brought its overall number of COVID-19 infections to more than 3 million, with more than 65,000 fatalities. And joining us now to talk about what is happening in Argentina is Lingbingay Lacalale. She is Philippine Ambassador to Argentina. Ambassador, good afternoon from Manila, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Karina.
How are you? How are you doing?
We're fine. I think the Filipino community on the whole has been doing very well. And the staff at the embassy also, thankfully, no one has got the COVID. And so we're actually life looks normal in Buenos Aires, despite the high levels of COVID cases.
So very interesting that you said that. How would you describe the situation in Argentina as we speak? Because we know of the news reports, we've seen the images, but you say life is like normal there. How so?
Yes. You see, the Argentinians love to go outside and have their cafes. They like to dine out. They like to visit friends. So despite, there are already in place stricter measures in terms of the curfew. But on an ordinary day, you can see people on the streets dining out. You know, they're not allowed to dine in anymore. But there are still some restaurants that, you know, the cafes that allow some people to dine in. And you will see people shopping, although they, you know, they limit the number of people that go in. Groceries are open. Malls are closed. But small businesses are allowed to operate.
What about the...
And schools...
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Ambassador.
Well, now that the Supreme Court... Yeah, it's now that the schools are at least in Buenos Aires, the schools are going to open because the president wanted them closed. But the point was, the mayor was saying that there's no science-based evidence that the schools should close. So now their children are going back to school.
All right. So before we get into that, I want to talk about the hospital capacities, though. We just mentioned in a report that there are... The cases are increasing. You say life is normal, but what about the hospitals? What's the situation there?
Yes. In Buenos Aires, I think the private hospitals are already full, 100%. In public hospitals, they are 85% capacity full. Now, it depends on the different provinces, because the center actually... of the cases are in the city of Buenos Aires and the province of Buenos Aires, which is just adjacent to the city. So this is where you have almost half of the cases. And so this is where you will find the healthcare system being overwhelmed.
All right. Going back to the schools, the Supreme Court, they're just ordered the schools to be opened, really disagreeing with President Fernandez there. I'm not sure about the demographics of Filipinos living there in Buenos Aires. Do Filipinos there, do you have young Filipinos? Do you have young learners there who are Filipinos in Buenos Aires? And do you think, as ambassador, that it's really going to be safe for children to go back to school?
Well, okay, your first question is how the Filipino here, the Filipino community is only very small. It's about, we have about 224 Filipinos, and quite a not, we don't have a big population of children. Many of the population is composed of majority are from religious orders. And members of household staffs of the diplomats, and many are married to Argentinians, and these are those with families and with small children.
Okay.
But if we are going to rely on the science and evidence, it is safe for the children to go back to school.
What about the other... members of the school community, though, the teachers, the other personnel, have they been vaccinated? What can you tell us about the vaccination rollout there in Argentina?
Well, there is a priority list of those who can be vaccinated. The first group, of course, is are the frontliners, you know, the medical personnel. The second are the senior citizens, 60 and above. And then you have the armed forces personnel, the police, and then you have the teachers. So actually the teachers have not been vaccinated fully unless they reach the age of 16 and above. So unfortunately, the doses that are available are not enough to vaccinate everybody all at the same time. And that's why the president is going to Europe to secure more commitments to supply vaccines to Argentina.
Right. You know, Ambassador, unlike other countries, Argentina's economy was not doing well even before the pandemic hit. How is the economy doing now, and how are people coping?
With much difficulty, because the poverty rate has really gone up. And... what do you call this? Inflation is about 49%. If other sources of statistics say that it's more than 49%, it's 49%. And we ourselves experience this because when you go to the grocery, the prices go up so exponentially in just a few days. And well, it has been a big burden to the poorer sectors of society. But the government is providing assistance to them, particularly in the areas, in the poorer areas of the city and the provinces. So they are receiving in-kind and monetary support from the government. It has been difficult.
All right. Ambassador, as Argentina continues to grapple with the COVID crisis there in terms of its effect on the economy, the healthcare system, the rate of joblessness as well, and inflation, what do you think? What can the Philippines learn from what is happening in Argentina?
Well, I think we have to be able to look ahead rather than react when the situation is already there. So Argentina was able to get vaccines earlier than its neighbors because they already had contracted the Sputnik to be delivered to them. So they were first in line, actually. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a disconnect sometimes in the government between the economic ministers also and the politicians. Mm. Because Argentina is a populist administration, is populist, and therefore there is this pull to have Argentina reduce subsidies so that they can help pay their debts to the IMF. Mm. However, if you do this at this particular time, it will be disastrous for the people. Yeah. Because they have been enjoying subsidies. And the problem with having subsidies is you have to have the money to provide for the subsidies, to continue with the subsidies. So it is a difficult situation that Argentina finds itself in.
Mm. What about the other lessons learned from the Argentina experience that maybe the Philippines can take away from?
The lesson is in the city, people observe the social distancing and safety protocols. Mm-hmm. But where you have the slum areas, it is very difficult to also institute the social distancing. Mm. Like the Philippines, we are, the Argentinians love to have parties, love to have fun and to go out. They're very sports minded. So they're all in the parks. They love to do their sports in the park. And this is, but they are actually following, the social protocols, at least in the cities. Mm. Now, the mayor also of Buenos Aires has focused primarily on the most depressed areas. And this is something that maybe the Philippines can learn from. Testing was done extensively in these areas. And then assistance was given right away. Special places to quarantine them, if they have the COVID, were put up so that they didn't have to infect families in close quarters. Mm. So that, the mayor of Buenos Aires have shown the way forward and has been recognized for the early measures he has taken to address the COVID situation.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Very important lessons that you just gave us there. Ambassador to Argentina, Lingling Ailacanlale, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. You keep safe. Take care.
Thank you. And you too.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Moving on, the U.S. sets yet another COVID-19 vaccination target. President Joe Biden wants 70% of all adults in the country vaccinated against COVID-19 with at least one dose by the July 4th Independence Day holiday. He calls on young people to get inoculated. So far, nearly 150 million Americans have received at least one shot. Over 105 million Americans have been fully vaccinated. Biden's new goal comes as his administration faces new delays in administering the vaccines, with more people hesitant to get inoculated.
Now we're going to have to bring the vaccine to people who are less eager. So we also know that there are millions of Americans who just need a little bit of encouragement to get the shot. I recently called on employers to do their part by offering paid time off for employees to get vaccinated and opening up a tax credit program that reimburses the businesses for the cost of giving the employee the time off to get vaccinated. And I want to thank the 1,000 businesses that have stepped up so far.
Biden had previously announced July 4th as a target date for when Americans can gather in small groups, signaling a return to greater normalcy. The Philippine Food and Drug Administration approving the emergency use application of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine. It only took the FDA a little over a week to review and approve the application of the U.S.-based vaccine manufacturer. The Philippines is expecting the arrival of the first batch of Moderna vaccines this month. That's around 194,000 doses from the total of 20 million jabs ordered by the government.
It has been decided that all conditions for an EUA are present, and that the benefit of using the vaccine outweighs the known and potential risks. The vaccine has an overall efficacy rate of over 94% in preventing COVID-19, and the efficacy rate is consistently above 80% among all age groups above 18 years old.
Moderna is the seventh vaccine brand to be approved for emergency use in the Philippines. Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Gamaleya, Sinovac, Johnson & Johnson, and Bharat Biotech have all received the green light from the FDA. Meanwhile, the FDA not taking responsibility for the inoculation of President Rodrigo Duterte with a vaccine that they have yet to approve. Health Secretary Francisco Duque administered the Sinopharm jab on the president Monday. The vaccine is only covered by a special permit for compassionate use. The FDA adds it has not yet finished evaluating the Sinopharm vaccine.
Sinabi pong compassionate special permit, hindi naman po yun authorization na binibigay ng FDA, kundi ibig sabihin, in this case, yun pong head ng PSG Hospital, siya yung nag-guarantee na inaral niya yung bakuna and they take full responsibility for it.
Domingo says, though, they are seeing good results in their evaluation of the Sinopharm jab. Palace spokesperson Harry Roque says the dose received by the president was part of a donation from the Chinese government. Meanwhile, Roque announced Wednesday morning the president will hold another public briefing later on today. A proposal at the Philippine Congress for mandatory vaccinations gets the backing of the Presidential Advisor on Entrepreneurship, citing informal surveys among companies. But for an employers group, the move is unnecessary. Alvin El Chico tells us why.
Potential side effects and religion are just some of the reasons safety engineer Stan Ortiz get from workers who do not want to take COVID vaccine. In an informal survey, only around 70% of his colleagues want to be vaccinated.
First namin na ginawa is survey muna kung sino yung willing to get vaccinated. Then after nung nakita namin kung sino yung mga nag-decline, yun doon kami nag-focus. Doon kami nag-focus na one-on-one na lang sila. Okay. Ano yung reason bakit tayo nilang vaccine, then ano yung pwede namin gawin to convince them.
But the 70% acceptance rate in Stan's company is even higher than some firms the Presidential Advisor for Entrepreneurship, Joey Concepcion, had surveyed. Concepcion hopes the memorandum from the Labor Department strongly encouraging workers to take the vaccine will help lessen vaccine hesitancy. According to Concepcion, the target is to get 80 to 90% vaccination among workers to achieve herd immunity.
Yung mga supervisor managers pa rin namin ang kailangan very instrumental sa pag-convince sa mga empleyado na talagang kailangan. Kasi kung kalahati or let's say 70% sa isang shift ang kukuha ng vaccine, yung iba the others are also at risk, no? Kasi yung efficacy ng mga vaccine hindi naman 100%.
For the Employers Confederation of the Philippines, the number of workers who want to be vaccinated is slowly going up. And President Duterte's televised vaccination will convince some workers to take the vaccine.
Noong una, mababa talaga. Pero ngayon, pataas ang pataas eh. Ang mga question nga sa amin ngayon, sa mga kumpanya, sir, bakit po kami hindi kasali sa priority?
That's why for ECOP, there's no need to make the vaccinations mandatory. But for Concepcion, if the herd immunity is not achieved, the government has the option to push for legislation that will make vaccination mandatory in order to revive the economy. Alvin Olchico, ABS-CBN News.
The Philippines has administered a little over 2 million COVID-19 shots. More than 1.7 million individuals have received their first dose, while over 320,500 have been fully vaccinated. Of that number, just over 284,000 health workers got their second vaccine jabs. Meanwhile, the country has received over 4 million COVID-19 doses from Sinovac, AstraZeneca, and Sputnik V. The Philippines kicked off its vaccination drive last March.
Ating maabot yung ating minimity na at least 70% by the end of the year. May specific areas naman na mas bubuhusan natin ng vaccine para mas marami silang maproteksan.
Philippine authorities confirm an additional 5,683 COVID-19 cases Tuesday. This brings the total number of cases in the country to 1,067,000. The latest daily case tally is significantly lower than the figures reported in recent days. But the health department says this is because several laboratories failed to submit their data in time for the count. Meanwhile, 97 more patients died, pushing the death toll to 17,622. 9,000 additional recoveries were also recorded. Health authorities now recommending a revision of quarantine protocols for returning overseas Filipino workers. That's after they detected hundreds of new cases of the virus variants from the UK and South Africa. The health department at the Philippine Genome Center on Tuesday reported 289 new cases of the UK variant and 380 additional cases of the South Africa variant. Health spokesperson Maria Rosario Vergeres says they are now proposing that returning OFWs are tested on the eighth day of their quarantine as opposed to the current sixth-day testing requirement.
Based on evidence and based on the recommendations of our experts that the viral load is still high until the eighth day. So we want to be sure, yes, that we get to be able to identify all of these travelers coming in accurately so that we can isolate properly and we can, break the chain of transmission. The requirement really is 14 days quarantine. But what we do right now, because of our resources, we quarantine them until the seventh day that they get tested and the results are out. And then if the results are out, they are endorsed to the local governments, which supposedly should complete this 14-day. But we have seen that there are lapses in this kind of protocol. That's why we are revising so that we can have stricter border control, especially now that there are different variants in the other countries.
Two Philippine lawmakers are expanding their controversial distribution of ivermectin as treatment for COVID-19. Anak Kalusugan Party List Representative Mike Defensor says they may even give away the anti-parasitic drug house to house. This despite repeated warnings from authorities and doctors groups against using ivermectin as treatment for COVID-19.
Kailangan tayong humanap ng pamamaraan para itigil ang pagkalat ng sakit na COVID-19 at matulungan natin yung mga nagkakasakit na huwag nang madala sa ospital.
The Science and Technology Department is set to begin clinical trials for ivermectin this month. The Philippine Agriculture Department is also researching if the drug can be used to treat African swine fever. We're going to take a break now. Coming up, the Philippine Coast Guard drives away Chinese militia vessels in Sabina Shoal. More on that when we come back. Dateline Philippines will return after the break. Stay with us here on ANC. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine getting the green light from Philippine regulators. India's COVID-19 case tally soars to pass 20 million. And Argentina also reeling from a surge in coronavirus infections. The country's ambassador, however, says life remains normal in Buenos Aires, and the Philippine community there is doing well. Philippine Coast Guard turns away Chinese ships in Sabina Shoal. And Malacanang's claim it is protecting journalists in the Philippines belittled amid the first anniversary of the closure of media giant ABS-CBN. Back with more news. The Philippine Coast Guard fends off seven Chinese militia vessels in Sabina Shoal, according to the PCG. The seven ships were seen staying in Sabina Shoal last April 27 during a joint maritime exercise between Coast Guard personnel and the Bureau of Fisheries and Aquatic Resources. The PCG reminded the Chinese vessels Sabina Shoal is within the Philippines' exclusive economic zone. After failing to get a response, the PCG sailed closer to the Chinese ships. This prompted the Chinese vessels to leave the area. Philippine Senator Franklin Drilon urging government to continue its so-called megaphone diplomacy in its maritime dispute with China. Drilon says this is the only way Manila can bring up the issue globally. China's foreign ministry called on Manila to stop its megaphone diplomacy. That's after Manila's top diplomat, Teodoro Loxin Jr., told Chinese vessels to leave the West Philippine Sea in an expletive-laden tweet.
We could not confront them. We are not strong militarily. We are nothing compared to China in terms of military strength. And therefore, the only available peaceful means to us is to keep this issue in the forefront. What is left to us is to keep on reminding the world that China is not following the rule of law, but the rule of might in this part of the country, of the world.
Secretary Loxin has since apologized for that outburst, but for a security analyst, Loxin's tone helped reflect the tougher attitude Manila is taking on the issue.
As long as we're being polite with Beijing, they know they can keep pushing and taking more territory. It is a breakthrough in terms of how the administration there in Manila is approaching the Beijing approach. And I think in a way it's quite good. And the apology really isn't an apology because he only apologized to Wang Yi. He didn't apologize to China. He didn't apologize to Xi Jinping. So I think his apology was really a backhanded reiteration of his original statement, which is, I think, a good thing.
Magistrates on Tuesday continued grilling government lawyers about certain provisions under the controversial Anti-Terrorism Act. And as Mike Navaglio tells us, the discussion became heated when the topic of red baiting organizers of community pantries came up.
Community pantry organizers found an unexpected ally in Supreme Court Associate Justice Ricardo Rosario on Tuesday when he grilled a lawyer from the Office of the Solicitor General about the supposed baseless allegations from government officials linking them to the Communist Party.
Recently, you must be aware of this, organized of community pantries within Metro Manila were red tagged by law enforcement agencies, such as the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict, NTF-ELCAC, without sufficient evidence to prove their alleged connection with communists. How will the government ensure that the ATA will not unduly and unlawfully identify any person as a suspect of terrorism merely on the basis of suspicion?
Your Honor, the government would not like to use the term red tagging because red tagging is a term that was not coined by the government. If I may say this, Your Honor, the term red tagging was used by the lefties to cite...
You resent my choice of the word red tagging in my question?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It is the submission of the government that what it does is truth tagging and not red tagging, Your Honor.
But no less than the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner on Human Rights, in its report on the Philippines situation in June last year, acknowledged the phenomenon of red tagging, referring to labeling of individuals as communist or terrorist. The Supreme Court at one point also tried to define the term in a 2015 ruling. Magistrates on Tuesday continued grilling government lawyers defending the Anti-Terrorism Act. Aside from red tagging, justices quizzed lawyers from the Office of the Solicitor General if the Anti-Terrorism Council can authorize an arrest and if the 24-day extended detention period under the law violates the 3-day limit for detention under cases of rebellion and invasion under the Constitution. One magistrate asked, isn't this already a punishment equivalent to a light penalty under the revised penal code?
Looking into the spirit of the law, can you not see that what you were saying, under extraordinary circumstances, the limitation, the maximum is only 3 days. And yet, under ordinary times, like what we're having right now, we are under ordinary times, the maximum period of detention is 24 days.
Terrorism is different. It's different from just an ordinary crime, Your Honor.
Magistrates also sought clarification as to the difference between designation and prescription. Under designation, the Anti-Terrorism Council identifies individuals and groups which can be tagged as terrorists without the benefit of a hearing, while prescription goes through the Court of Appeals. A magistrate asked, if there is evidence, why not go straight to court? Other magistrates also took issue with the addition of several provisions in the implementing rules and regulations. They were not mentioned in the law itself.
Isn't the IRR inclusion of the grounds under the rules of court for warrantless arrests in Rule 9.2 an admission that Section 29 is unconstitutional as written in the law?
Detention under Section 29 follows a valid warrantless arrest, Your Honor.
So are you not asking the court to unreasonably stretch the interpretation of the law in order for it to be valid?
We submit that Section 29 is clear.
In all, 5 magistrates took turns asking questions of Solicitor General Secalida's associates. Associate Justice Rosemary Carandang, who was set to ask National Security Advisor Hermenes Esperon, will continue her interpolation next week. Mike Navalio, ABS-CBN News.
Well, today marks the first year since the Philippines' largest broadcast network went off the air. On May 5, 2020, the National Telecommunications Commission ordered ABS-CBN to shut down following the expiration of its broadcast franchise May 4th. The House of Representatives would later on reject the network's franchise application in a move seen by many as politically motivated. While Malacañang has distanced itself from the shutdown, President Duterte had repeatedly threatened the network of the non-renewal of its franchise. The president has accused ABS-CBN of being biased against it. For ABS-CBN correspondent Mike Navalio, the culture of speaking out against the government must be reinforced.
When the people did not speak up against the attacks on the Inquirer, on the Rappler, I believe that emboldened the administration. It's a domino effect. And if we don't stop the administration from the very beginning, it might be too late. And if we don't develop this culture of pushing back, it will only embolden whoever is in power.
The anniversary of ABS-CBN's shutdown comes 2 days after President Duterte marked Press Freedom Day. He says his administration will continue to protect the media from threats and intimidation. Many journalists not buying his statement.
It's lip service, because it's not happening. It's not protecting the press in the Philippines. He's actually threatening it. He wanted to control it, and he wanted only his views and the favorable reporting about his administration. There will be a time of reckoning for this action.
ABS-CBN is the parent firm of this news channel. As we reported earlier, the Philippine Food and Drug Administration has approved the emergency use of a 7th COVID-19 vaccine. Let's get more details now from our correspondent, Michael Deliso. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. Good afternoon. The Philippine Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has approved the Emergency Use Authorization, or EUA, of the COVID-19 vaccine developed by American drug firm Moderna. In a media forum, FDA Director General Eric Domingo said it only took 10 days for the agency to approve Moderna's application, shorter than the usual 21 days because of its complete document. Domingo said the known and potential benefits of Moderna vaccine when used to prevent COVID-19 outweigh the known and potential risk of the said vaccine. The Philippines has placed an initial order of 200,000 COVID-19 jabs from the American pharmaceutical giant and expects the doses to be delivered by next month. The national government hopes to get some 20 million more Moderna jabs that will be split between the public and private inoculation programs. Moderna is the seventh coronavirus vaccine to be granted EUA in the Philippines. The FDA earlier cleared the vaccine of Pfizer, BioNTech, AstraZeneca, Sputnik V, Sinovac, Janssen, and Covaxin for emergency use.
Decided that all conditions for an EUA are present, and that the benefit of using the vaccine outweighs the known and potential risks. The vaccine has an overall efficacy rate of over 94% in preventing COVID-19. And the efficacy rate is consistently above 80% among all age groups above 18 years old.
That's FDA Director General Eric Domingo. Back to you, Carmina.
Yes, Mike, just one question for you. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people who are really banking on this Moderna shipment, some of them had themselves inoculated already in their LGUs. Some of them are hoping that maybe this vaccine could be used as a booster shot so that it won't go to waste. Anything on that from the DOH, if the Moderna vaccine can be used as a booster shot against COVID-19, Mike?
Yeah, that's right, Carmina. Well, earlier, Vaccines for Secretary Carita Galvez said the Philippines plans to purchase COVID-19 vaccine booster shots from Moderna. Although Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergere said there is still no evidence yet if Moderna can be used as a booster shot for those who have already been vaccinated. Well, studies on how this method might be used were still ongoing, along with whether it could be mixed with different vaccine brands. Although some health experts in the U.S. say it could provide additional immunity against COVID-19 variants that are beginning to spread in the U.S. from, you know, Brazil variant, South Africa, and the United Kingdom. Well, the DOH here in the Philippines said there is still no evidence yet, and studies are still ongoing. Carmina.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael DeLisa, there joining us on the line. Keep safe, Mike. Take care. On to more news now in business. Philippine inflation in April remained steady at 4.5%. This is the fourth straight month that inflation rose above the government's target range of between 2 to 4%. However, April's 4.5% inflation rate is well within the Philippine Central Bank's 4.2 to 5% target range. Higher food and transport costs affected the rise in the prices of goods. Inflation in the National Capital Region hit 3.7% in April, lower than the national average of 4.7%. BPI's lead economist, June Neri, says asset prices need to be watched closely as well.
While it could be true that inflation is transitory, and therefore there is no need to hike until next year, there is also that possibility it can persist. No? Because prior to the pandemic, the trend of inflation was actually upwards. So asset prices will always be volatile in an environment where the policy rate is too far or much, much lower than the current inflation rate. Because there's always the concern that the central bank would actually move to the opposite direction.
The national government's total outstanding debt reaches a new record high of more than 10.7 trillion pesos in March. The Treasury Bureau says this is 3.5% higher than the national government's debt last February. They attribute the rise to the net issuance of government securities. Of the total debt, 7.74 trillion pesos, or 72%, come from domestic sources, while 3 trillion pesos, or 28%, came from external sources. The Philippine government has been borrowing heavily to finance both its infrastructure drive and its COVID-19 response efforts. News overseas, Mexico vows to find out who was responsible for Tuesday's train collapse, which killed at least 24 people. Details in this report.
Workers in Mexico City slowly hoisted one of two train cars dangling above the site of a collapsed railway overpass on Tuesday, using several tall cranes to clear the twisted metal that plunged onto a busy road below Monday night, killing at least 24 people and injuring 79, including children.
El pueblo de México tiene que conocer toda la verdad.
Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador vowed that the government would find out who was responsible for the collapse of Mexico City's newest metro line. The crash has raised questions about safety on one of the world's busiest metro systems, which serves an area that is home to more than 20 million people. Four people who live in the area told Reuters they observed the beams below the elevated tracks visibly shaking when trains crossed. The overpass was part of a railway line that was added to the network less than a decade ago and has been plagued by allegations of corruption. In 2014, just 2 years after it opened, several of the line's stations were closed for repairs of structural problems. The railway line was built by a consortium including a company controlled by the family of Mexican tycoon Carlos Slim and the Mexican unit of French train maker Alstom, which said on Tuesday that it would cooperate with and assist Mexican authorities in the investigation.
Myanmar's ambassador to the United Nations tells lawmakers more sanctions on Myanmar's junta's assets are needed. Ambassador Kam Mo Toon wants Washington to impose sanctions on the state-owned Myanmar Foreign Trade Bank and the state-run Myanmar Oil and Gas Enterprise. The Biden administration had already slapped sanctions on the military generals who led the February 1 coup, as well as family members and businesses that provide them with revenue.
I wish to appeal to you and the House of Representatives as follows. To save lives of innocent civilians, protection should be immediately extended to the people of Myanmar. I wish to stress that Myanmar is not just witnessing another major setback to democracy, but also the crisis is threatening the regional peace and security. In line with the principle that a state has the responsibility to protect its own people from crimes against humanity, the NUG, together with the people, have taken all possible ways and means to defend our own people from the military's inhumane and brutal acts.
In sports, the Dallas Mavericks rolled past the Miami Heat 127-113 thanks to a name familiar with Heat fans. Tim Hardaway Jr., son of retired Heat legend Tim Hardaway Sr., led Dallas's impressive performance. The younger Hardaway made 10 three-pointers on his way to 36 points. Hardaway tied the Mavericks' record for most three-pointers in a game. The victory allowed Dallas to move up to fifth place in the tight Western Conference playoff race. The founder and CEO of online music giant Spotify makes a bid to purchase one of Europe's top football clubs, Arsenal. We have more in this report.
Daniel Ek, the founder and CEO of Spotify, made an offer to buy Premier League club Arsenal from its current owners, a takeover bid that is likely to be drawn out. That's according to former Arsenal star Thierry Henry, who said the Swedish billionaire reached out to the Stan Kroenke family to make an offer. Forbes reported that Ek said he had secured the $2.8 billion needed to buy Arsenal, and that team greats Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, and Patrick Vieira backed the bid. In response to Ek's initial interest, Kroenke and his son Josh put out a statement saying they remained 100% committed to Arsenal and were not interested in selling a stake in the club. Henry, meanwhile, told Sky Sports that the family needed to listen to the offer, adding, quote, "A lot of people have been screaming that they want the owner out. We are trying to offer a solution involving the fans and getting the DNA of the club back." Arsenal's among six English clubs who signed up for the proposed European Super League project before withdrawing amid a storm of protests from fans, players, and the British government. The club is ninth in the Premier League standings and in the semifinals of the Europa League.
Veteran entertainment columnist Ricky Law has passed away. He was 75. This was confirmed by Philippine Star, where he worked as an associate editor and entertainment editor for 35 years. His family did not reveal details of his death. They're also asking for privacy. Senator Grace Poe recalls how Law became one of the most revered and credible writers in the entertainment industry. She says Law always prioritized the truth and highlighted the positive values of his subjects. Veteran actress, now Congresswoman Vilma Santos Recto, said Law will be missed. And before we go, thousands of people in the UK party without face masks and social distancing as part of the country's COVID-19 pilot music festival. Take a look.
This is partying like it's 2019 inside the UK's COVID festival experiment.
Big up Liverpool for having the first non-socially distance event in the country.
We're just excited. All of us are excited. We're all on the verge of tears, ready to go in.
I have literally spent about 3 weeks preparing for this outfit. Oh, so long.
Live music returns to the birthplace of the Beatles when the English city of Liverpool hosted a one-off music festival. 5,000-odd people ditched face coverings and social distancing rules in the name of science and music.
It's just so good.
It's amazing.
It's been too long. It has.
It's so strange, honestly. Coming in here and just seeing like the couple thousand people who are already here. I mean, I think there's 5,000 people here today. So it's just strange to see people with like no masks on and just like enjoying themselves. It's good to be back, honestly.
Lead singer of the band Blossoms, Tom Ogden.
It's been 413 days since we were last on stage in Bournemouth on the 15th of March last year. So it's been a long time and, you know, we're delighted to be here and just it's an honour to be asked to do today.
You're going to have the best night you've had for a very, very long time.
The event took place in a purpose-built tent. Guests had to arrive having tested negative for COVID-19 and promised to test themselves again 5 days after the 10 p.m. curfew.
There's been precautions, COVID tests, and making sure that everyone's, you know, before we even got to the search area, there was people making sure that you tested negative.
It does feel a bit uncomfortable almost, but I just feel so happy that it's going ahead and that people are allowed.
I'm so happy
that finally, like, businesses and events such as this can go ahead, and I just feel very happy about that.
It's a far cry from the multi-day events like Glastonbury from years gone by. But the data from this will be used by the government's events research programme to help understand the effect of crowds on the spread of the virus, in the hope that bigger events could soon return. The festival's managing director, Melvin Benn.
And just the joy on everybody's faces, you know, the plumbers, the electricians, the stage builders, the lighting teams, the sound teams, everybody just wants to be back working, and you can feel that they're... The burden of the last 12 months, the last 15 months, has just been lifted a little with a bit of expectation that this could be real.
Let's enjoy life. Let's get back to normal.
And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, you guys. Keep it to you on ANC.